Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour. The Law Hour is an educational service of public interest on your area, George Ford. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on drug side effects when we come back. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. And we're taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if your plumber said, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? What if a carpenter said that? Your carpenter says, he who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client. Now, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or fix his own steps is incompetent? Well, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or carpenter. Now, listen, James Nielsen, he's a professor at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he said. He said, it's a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. And it's worse than that. Most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real, honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom and without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. So whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and for their clients, it is a cruel hoax. Now that's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Now, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure is a school, and it's available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for your free general law CD package. That's the place to start. Do it right now before you forget. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this thing of drug side effects. And I said that this drug side effect problem over here is killing 300,000 people a year. Now, that's what they admit to. That's the government, the FDA. That's the American Medical Association. Those are the groups that keep track of the people who die. They make it public. You've probably heard these numbers before. They're not advertised in the same way that terrorism is advertised or cancer is advertised or Advil or Prevacade or Prevacin or these drugs are advertised and promoted. But the information is out there. It's been out there for many, many years. It's so shocking that when I saw these numbers, I said, my God, you know, you people jump up and down and rant and rave about 2,400 people killed over in Iraq. 300,000 people die every year. Preventable deaths. I mean, every single one of these people that are dying here in the United States from drug reactions or drug interactions, iatrogenic disease, as it's sometimes called, are preventable. Preventable. There isn't any reason for it. It's a mistake on the part of the doctor. It's the wrong drug given to the wrong person, or it's the right drug given to the right person in the wrong amount, or some combination thereof. Or in many cases, it's drugs that are killers that never should have been put on the market to start with. Never should have been put on the market, but they find their way onto the market because of the system that has been created to turn America into a nation of drug addicts, which it has worked perfectly. America is a nation of druggies. And we're taught to be opposed to illegal drugs, and we're taught to be tolerant of legal drugs. And think what makes drugs legal? Congress, the FDA. Food and Drug Administration, American Medical Association, the medical people, they're the ones that make drugs legal. Now, we wouldn't have any cocaine or heroin problem in the United States if Americans wouldn't buy it. You know, people aren't spending their hours of time growing cocoa plants in Colombia and fighting off government forces and Agent Orange and the FARC rebels and all of this and then smuggling it into the United States and risking 30 years in prison or death for no good reason. They do it for money. And if there was no market for this, you know, you just take a look at the market, for instance, in strychnine. Do you Americans have a strychnine problem? Now, do you have drug dealers or do you have people selling strychnine on the streets and people are snorting strychnine and arsenic or some other deadly poison and killing themselves by the droves and scores? I don't think so. And that's because there's no market for it. There's a zero market for strychnine and arsenic. I mean, out on the street, I suppose there's some chemists and there's probably some businesses that buy a little arsenic. I don't have any. I can't ever remember going down to the store and saying, gee, I'd like to have a pound of arsenic. I just can't live another day without having some arsenic on the shelf or strychnine or something. You know, what would I do with it? What would I want it for? It's a deadly poison. It's dangerous to have around. Why would we want it? I'll just bet you that if you went to your medicine cabinet or if you went out to your workshop, you probably don't have any arsenic or strychnine either, which demonstrates my point. There's no market for it. We all know that it's deadly poison. Now, let's take a look. How many people are killed by arsenic and strychnine in the United States? I suppose there's a few cases every year where people are killed by arsenic and strychnine, but it's no great big problem to my knowledge. But boy, do we have a problem. We have a big problem over here with prescription drugs, killing 300,000 people a year. That's 1.5 jumbo jets a day crashing. That's 750 people a day. That's taking a 747, putting in 500 seats, loading it up with people and crashing it and killing 500 people every day. That kills just two-thirds of them. We have to kill 300,000 people a year, boys and girls. You've got to crash 1.5 of those jets every day to kill 300,000 people a year. Nobody's excited about that. Nobody sees that as any threat. Nobody sees that as any problem. I see it as a threat. I see it as a problem. I avoid doctors. I avoid hospitals. I avoid druggists. I avoid drugs, just like I do arsenic and strychnine. So far, it's worked well for me. I'm 67, and I hope to live to be 110, if possible. Let me tell you a little more of the story. This comes from Peter Montague, I guess his name is, the editor, Rachel's Environment and Health Weekly. Now, this is a group that's probably opposed to drugs. This is an anti-drug group. Prescription drugs that kill, another kind of drug problem. A medical report in 1998 estimated that adverse reactions to prescription drugs are killing about 106,000 Americans a year. Pause right there. That's 106,000 Americans a year that aren't on Medicare. Because Medicare keeps a separate set of records, and it kills 195,000 of you people on Medicare. So if you've got a Medicare card in your pocket, it kills almost twice as many people on Medicare as it does the general population. So the 106,000 is the general population. This is back in 1998. Roughly three times as many as are killed by automobiles. Now, we spent a lot of time, effort, and energy buckling our children into specially designed car seats to protect them from an auto crash, which might kill them in a car wreck as we drive down to Walmart to buy a prescription drug to feed that kid, which, let's just take a little number here, 300,000. And then let's just divide that by 43,000. Which means that your kid is seven times more likely to die from the prescription drug than he is in the car trip down to Walmart to buy the drug. Seven times more likely to die from the drug that you're so careful that you buckle him into this car seat to protect him so that he doesn't get killed. And that's why I've been saying to you in the last three or four programs, I said, you know, that's irrational. That doesn't make any sense. No, my chances of dying from a prescription drug are seven times greater than driving in my automobile. Automobiles are dangerous critters, and we all know that. And I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't buckle your seatbelt when you drive your automobile. I'm just telling you, let's get it into perspective, boys and girls, that driving your automobile isn't even on the radar screen when we compare death in America. Now, watch what happens. Number one killer, heart disease. Number two, stroke. Number three, cancer. Number four, prescription drugs. You got that? So I'm telling you about the number four killer in America. Now, let's put this into further perspective. Why do you take prescription drugs? Because you've got heart attack, stroke, and cancer. I mean, come on, kids. The reason for taking the drugs is because you've already got heart attack, stroke, and cancer. Isn't that the reason that we're taking the drugs? We've got some symptom. We're sick. Anybody ever ask the question, why did we get sick? Because there was a time before drugs. I can remember when Americans didn't take drugs. I'm old enough to remember when drugs in America were not common. We didn't use crack or cocaine. Hell, I was born 2 years after the prohibition of marijuana. Did you know that marijuana wasn't even prohibited in this country until 1937? 37. You know, when we didn't prohibit marijuana, cocaine, or heroin, we didn't have any heroin problem. I'll tell you what you do. If you want to create an arsenic problem in America, ban it. Ban arsenic. Make it illegal. And it'll so popularize this thing of arsenic that people will risk their lives to manufacture it overseas, smuggle it into the United States, and Americans will just fall all over each other trying to buy some down on the street corner. I'm not exactly clear as to why people are that way, but they are. Now, the report included only drugs that were given properly and under normal circumstances, excluding drugs that were administered in error or taken in attempted suicides. Now, when these errors of administration are included, the death toll goes over 140,000 a year. So we eliminated the administration and suicides, and it brought it down to 106,000. Such errors include prescribing the wrong drugs or the wrong dosage, giving medications to the wrong person, giving medications to the right person but in the wrong quantities or the wrong frequencies, and so on. According to the 1998 report, which analyzed the data from 39 separate studies conducted over the last 32 years in hospitals, 3.2 out of every 1,000 or 3,200 per million hospital patients die from adverse reactions to prescription drugs. Of the 106,000 people killed each year by prescription drugs in the U.S., 41%, that's 43,000, were admitted to the hospital because of an adverse drug reaction. 41%. Well, boys and girls, that's 40%. That's 2 out of every 5. That's pushing half, isn't it? About half the people that are admitted to hospitals because of adverse drug reactions. The drugs are the cause of 40% of the hospital admissions in this country. Can you grasp the significance of that? Well, boys and girls, if you eliminated drugs, you could eliminate 40% of the hospital admissions. 40% of the disease in America could be eliminated by eliminating drugs. Let me go on to say that 41%, 43,000, were admitted to the hospital because of an adverse drug reaction. The other 59%, 63,000 people, were hospitalized for some other cause. But they developed a fatal reaction to prescription drugs that they received while they were in the hospital. Got that? Did you hear that? So out of these 106,000 people that are admitted to the hospital, remember, 40% of them now are admitted because of drugs. And then when they get to the hospital, the other half, you know, roughly half, 59%, 60%, They're given some drug or combination of drug which kills them when they get to the hospital. Hey, there's something doesn't add up here, does it? And then he went on to say here, in the U.S. in 1994, there were 33,125,492 hospital admissions. Okay. Last time I saw a number, it was about 37, 38 million that are being admitted to the hospitals now in 2006. Now, why are people so prone to taking drugs? They ask for them. They want more drugs. People are actually asking for more drugs. They want more. Now, the sale of prescription drugs has more than doubled in the United States during the past 8 years. More than doubled. That's just in 8 years. In 1990, Americans were spending around $40 billion on prescriptions. In 1997, national spending on prescriptions reached $78.9 billion, roughly double, $80 billion. Prescription drugs are the fastest growing portion of health care costs, having risen at the rate of 17% a year for the past few years. So not only are we taking twice as many drugs, the price of these drugs is going up by 17% a year. Prescription drugs across the counter cost six times more than the same drugs down on the street corner. Six times more. Listen, no wonder Rush Limbaugh was buying the stuff down in a Denny's parking lot. He saved six times by buying the stuff from Joe down on the street corner, for crying out loud. Can you believe it? And then, of course, our Congress, in conspiracy with the FDA and with the pharmaceutical companies, has prohibited or is in the process of prohibiting you people from buying your drugs from Canada. And that's because they told us that when you buy drugs from Canada, we can't guarantee the purity of it. My God, heaven forbid that you people should take dirty drugs. I never could figure out, is it the dirty drugs that are killing so many people or the clean drugs? Boys and girls, it's not the dirty drugs from Canada that's killing you. It's the clean drugs from the United States. Those are the ones that are killing you. It's not the dirty drugs from Colombia or Ecuador or Bolivia. Well, they kill a few. That's right. Illegal drugs kill 6,000 a year, and the legal drugs kill 106,000. And then if you're on Medicare, it kills another 195,000. Doctors don't report more than 10% of the numbers that are adverse. Yeah, that's right. They figured 10% are being reported. The other 90% go unreported. And that's because if a doctor reports that there's an adverse drug reaction, let's suppose you go to your doctor. He recommends you take Vioxx. You go have a heart attack. And the doctor then, he sends in a report. He says, Joe Finkelstein had a heart attack. I was prescribing Vioxx to him, and I think the Vioxx caused the heart attack. Joe Finkelstein, the minute he finds that out, goes to his lawyer, and he sues you, doctor. Can you see why doctors don't want to make these kinds of admissions and confessions? So don't expect the doctors to be writing into the FDA saying, gee, let me report all these adverse reactions that we're getting, although they do get them. Now, urging prescriptions, that is, urging physicians to prescribe prescription drugs, especially new drugs, is a huge business in the United States. Huge business. Well, think about it. It has to be. In order for you to double the consumption of drugs in 8 years, somebody has to be behind that demand. People aren't risking their lives to supply you with cocaine for no good reason. There has to be a demand. There has to be a profit. Now, drug dealers out on the street only get 1/6 the amount that Pfizer gets. And they risk prison terms to deliver to you cocaine. And by the way, your war on drugs is a total failure. There are more drugs in the United States today, illegal drugs, more illegal drugs in the United States today than there ever has been in our history, and at the lowest prices. So if you're telling me that the billions of dollars of taxpayer money that you're spending on this war for drugs has been effective in any regard, you've got your head up the wrong end of your anatomy. I haven't seen a number anywhere that would indicate that there is any slowdown. In fact, if anything, there's been a speed up. The harder you work, the more you spend on drug eradication, the more drugs enter the country and the cheaper they become. And at that, they are so profitable. The people risk death and jail terms to deliver cocaine, heroin, and marijuana to you in your neighborhood at 1/6 the price that you can get it from Pfizer, Merck, or Glaxo, SmithKline. How do you like that? Now, that's the free enterprise system at work. That is the proof that the free enterprise system works and that the communist system doesn't. Because the socialist system costs you 6 times more and kills, let's check that one out again, 300,000. We're killing 300,000. Let's divide that by 6,000. And that is 50. Now, listen, they kill 50 times more people and charge you 6 times more to do it. And then they've got the gall to tell you that the drugs that you're importing from Canada aren't pure enough. Can you believe this? The drugs from Canada aren't pure enough, but the drugs that are dirty, impure, delivered, you know, by airplane, boat, and et cetera, from Colombia, kill fewer people by 50 times. 50 times fewer people die from cocaine from Colombia than die from Vioxx and other over-the-counter drugs in America. How do you like that? But it gets better as we read on. According to the New York Times, the sales force of the largest 40 drug companies has exploded in recent years. In 1994, there were 35,000 full-time detail people employed by drug companies to visit doctors and prescribe pharmaceutical products. But by 1998, the number had grown to 56,000. One salesperson for every 11 doctors in the country. Drug companies spent $5.3 billion in the first 11 months of 1998 sending their detail people into doctors' offices and hospitals, plus another $1 billion putting on marketing events for doctors. Well, let's do a little arithmetic here. I'll get my famous Sharp EL1197G3 calculator out here. If you've got 56,000 of these salesmen, 56,000, and there's one for every 11, then there must be 11 times that many doctors. So let's go times 11 doctors, and we have 616,000 doctors in the country. 616,000 doctors, rounded off to 600,000. And they're spending $5.3 billion in the first 11 months. Well, that'd round off to about $6 billion in 12 months, wouldn't it? You know, round numbers. So 600,000 doctors are receiving $6 billion a year. Let's see if I can figure that one out. Let me write that down. 600,000 doctors receive $6 billion. Six, well, that's 9 zeros, 3, 1, 4, 6, 9. Now let's take off 3 zeros there and 3 zeros there. And let's take 600 into 6 million. Let me get my 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then let's just divide that by 600. And that gives us $10,000 per doctor. Now, picture this. The drug companies of America are spending $10,000 every year on every doctor in America to educate them in their drug products. I'll bet you old Joe down on the street corner ain't getting $10,000 a year spent educating him on how to deliver clean cocaine from Costa Rica. And he doesn't have any problem selling his product at 1/6 the price of Merck. And kills. You take the kill ratio of illegal drugs versus legal drugs, and it doesn't even show up on the radar screen. That's how few people are dying from cocaine. And you people get real excited. God, we've got to eradicate drugs. You spend your tax dollars eradicating drugs. It reminds me of the same irrational behavior that we see with gasoline. I mean, irrational behavior. As old Alan Greenspan said, you know, irrational exuberance in buying stocks. Remember that? Irrational exuberance. Americans are faced with a gas problem, a gas price problem. Maybe you've heard about this. Maybe you've been watching the news. Every night on the news, I tell you, God, the average price of gasoline is $3 a gallon. The average price of gasoline was $2.50, $2.75. Now it's up to $3 a gallon, headed for $4. And they take polls, and who do you blame? Well, we blame the oil companies because they're making record profits. Now, you know, I'm just an old country boy, and I'm not too smart. I don't have a degree from college, you know, in economics or anything, but I'm an old man now, and I can remember when I was a kid. You know, when I'm 10, 11, 12 years old, about 1950. The average price of gasoline in 1950 nationwide was 27.4 cents a gallon. Now, where I lived up in Northern California, it was over 30 cents. And my granddad was a grader at the Northern Redwood Lumber Company, and then later he became the mill superintendent. He got $1.72 an hour. He was skilled help, making $1.72 an hour in 1950. Now, 1950, he moved down to Willits, California, and he took over the Harold Castile Lumber Company. He made a little bit more money down there. See how much money he made down there. He made $6.50 a month. $6.50, and he was working 162 hours divided by 162. He was getting $4 an hour. Now, he was the superintendent of the mill, making $4 an hour. which was big money. I mean, God, that's humongous money. My Uncle Carol was making big money at $3 an hour as a sorter. Guys working on the green chain were making a buck and a quarter an hour. But unfortunately for them, but average guys were making about $1.75 an hour. Now let's think about this for a minute. Get your pencil and papers out here. I want to show you what irrational behavior is all about. It's an inability to solve a problem. That's what insanity is all about. It's your inability to solve your problems. And so you have to have a guardian appointed for you. The life is too big for you. It's too humongous. Can't handle things. Can't pay my bills. Can't deal with the wife and the kids screaming and the schools and you know, all these problems coming. So anyway, you take this $1.75. I did this for you, I think, last time. Take $1.75. And you divide that, and we'll just round it off by 30 cents a gallon. And that means that you got to work about an hour to get 6 gallons of gas. Yeah. Is that right? Yeah, that's about 6.06. 6 gallons of gas for an hour's work. And I pointed out to you that today, it's about the same. Today, you make $16.61. That's the average. Just take $16, you know, 16, and divide that by $3 a gallon. And it's about 5.33. It's $16.61. In round numbers today, $3 gas is equal to the same 30-cent gas. And that means that inflation is up by about 10 times, which is just about correct. Since 1950 to today, inflation is about 10. Prices today are 10 times greater than they were in 1950. Now, have you taken a look at the price of gasoline around the world? I did yesterday. I said, hey, Dirk, I'm going to find out what price of gas is in Holland and Venezuela and around the world. So he got 22 countries in the world. And here's what he did. He took Holland, for instance, and the average income, according to our CIA, he went to the CIA website and said, what's the average income in Holland? And the answer is $30,600 a year. And what's the average price of gas? And it's $6.25 a gallon. So in Holland, you have to work today 24 and a half minutes to buy a gallon of gas. That's in Holland. The highest price gas in the world, highest price gas on planet Earth, is in Holland, $6.25 a gallon. They make $30,000 a year. You have to work about 25 minutes to buy a gallon of gas. How long do you have to work in the United States to buy a gallon of gas? Well, the average price here was $2.23. Now, this is probably back in February. The average wage is $42,000 a year. That's the median average income. And you have to work 6.4 minutes to buy a gallon of gas. 6.4 minutes. Let's see how long we had to work for a gallon of gas. At $1.75, 1.75 divided by 0.30 is 5.8 minutes. So in 1950, you had to work 5.8 minutes to buy a gallon of gasoline, and today you got to work 6.4 minutes. My God. Yes, it's true. The price of gasoline is outrageous. You now have to work, about another 30 seconds to buy a gallon of gas today over 1950. Do you know where the highest price gasoline in the world is? It isn't in Holland. It's in Nigeria. Let me show you this. In Nigeria, you got to work 222 minutes to buy 1 gallon of gasoline. Your average median income is $1,000 a year. The price of gas is $1.85 a gallon. If you compare that to America, and if you had to pay, boys and girls, the same amount of labor to buy a gallon of gas in this country, the price would be $61.46 a gallon compared to Nigeria. Now, I'm comparing this to the highest price gas on the planet to demonstrate that, you know, if you ask me, I don't want to pay $3 a gallon for gas either. I want to buy gas for 50 cents a gallon. Hell, I'd rather if it was a nickel. Which, by the way, it's almost that in Venezuela. It's 12 cents a gallon in Venezuela. And it's only 33 cents a gallon in Iran. Those are the two cheapest places in the world for you to buy gasoline. The two cheapest places in the world for you to buy gasoline is Venezuela at 12 cents and Iran for 33 cents. In those countries, an Iranian has to work 5 minutes to buy a gallon of gas, and a Venezuelan has to work 2.2. So the Venezuelan is by far and away better off than you are. Keeping in mind, of course, that Iran and Venezuela both are sitting on oceans of oil, and they export oil, and they sell it all over the world. Now, remember I mentioned that we're irrational here in the United States, and the way we react to gasoline prices, and the way we react to drugs, and the way we react to the war in Iraq. The war in Iraq, when you take a look at the number of people being killed, doesn't even appear on the radar screen. Doesn't even appear on the radar screen. Every night, they parade, 3 more Americans were killed in Iraq tonight. And then they describe the bloody details. A roadside bomb went off and killed 3 Marines in their Humvee. And then they come back and they tell you, and this Humvee didn't have armor on it. Hey, kids, perspective. For the 3 Marines that are killed, it's a tragedy. And for the 3 families, it's a tragedy. But in the scope of war, in World War II, in one battle, in fact, there were 3 of these big battles, 40,000 Allied troops were killed in one battle. That's one day. 40,000, 43,000, 46,000 in one day. In the Normandy landings, they killed them by the thousands, boys and girls, in one day. You're talking about 2,500 people killed in 3 years. Now, come on. I'm not telling you that war isn't hell, and I'm not telling you that gasoline prices, you know, should be $6 a gallon. I hope they don't go to $6. I suffer just like you do. But I'm a little more pragmatic in keeping in perspective that the war in Iraq, which is a bad war, and I don't think we ought to be there, and there's all kinds of reasons why we ought to get the hell out of there, and why it's a bad deal. But you know, it's not the death toll, which is what you're being sold. Now, that's not even a blip. It's not the gasoline prices. That's not even a blip on the radar screen. When we're paying $6 a gallon for gasoline here in this country, let's just run this one by you. Let's take $16.61 an hour, 16.61, and let's divide that by 6.25. You're going to work an hour, and you're going to get 2.66 gallons of gasoline. You're going to get about, you know, 2.7 gallons of gasoline for an hour's work. At that point in time, when you're working 2.7 gallons of gasoline for an hour's time, you'll be about to where the Indians are right now. See, an Indian has to work 132.4 minutes. He pays $3.75 a gallon for gas, makes $3,400 bucks a year, and it's the equivalent of $36.71 a gallon. So you'd actually be better off than the Indian at $6.25 a gallon. And you can rest assured that the price of gasoline is going to go to $6.25, unless, of course, the oil companies wake up, which has always been the case in the past. And see, when the price of gasoline goes up, consumption falls. And what they're experimenting with now is, how can we jack the price of gas up and get people to pay us the most money out of their pockets and still burn the maximum number of gallons of gas? Nobody in the oil business wants Americans to cut their gas consumption in half. Nobody. That's crazy. That's cutting off their nose. They're not going to raise the price of gasoline to $6.25 a gallon in Texas and then have the number of gallons of gasoline get cut in half. That's crazy. That's bad business. They're going to jack the price of gas up to $3, $3.25, $3.50. And a few people will continue to buy that gasoline at $3, $3.25, $3.50. And the number of gallons drops off by 10%, then that'll be about the maximum. So they're just fishing for the maximum. Now I got to give you a reminder here. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, just go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. Again, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, perspective. The reason that we have so many drugs, different types of drugs, and so many physicians selling these drugs is because they are heavily promoted. When you watch the 6 o'clock news, watch Bob Schieffer tonight on CBS, and then count the number of ads on the 6 o'clock news that deal with drugs and drug companies. Just do the same thing. Watch television and pay attention now to how many drug ads are out there, how many cancer ads, how many heart attack ads, how many rheumatoid arthritis and so on ads there are, selling painkillers and aspirins and all these drugs. It generates demand. And then we go to our doctors. Now listen to this. Not all of these adverse reactions to new drugs can be anticipated or avoided under the present system, according to medical experts. It's simply not possible to identify all of the adverse effects of drugs before they're marketed. So says three physicians writing in the New England Journal of Medicine. In fact, overall, 51% of approved drugs have serious side effects not detected prior to approval. Remember I told you about this pharmacist, student of mine? He was telling me about this these adverse effects. Here's the way drugs come on the market. And I didn't know this until I explained it to me, so pay attention, I'll explain it to you. The pharmaceutical company says to itself, well, listen, there's this problem called arthritis, and we got to have a solution to this problem called arthritis, so let's start experimenting. So they start experimenting. So they spend a lot of money. They're not lying to you. They do, in fact, spend a lot of money. And they put chemicals together. And they just start off with all kinds of random chemicals. And then they stick them all together, and then they give rats and mice and monkeys and other animals arthritis, and then they shoot them up with these drugs. And if there's any improvement, they say, hey, we're getting on the right track. And pretty soon they come up with something called Vioxx. And this Vioxx actually creates an effect in the body that's beneficial. In other words, you got pain in your joints and you can hardly walk. And they shoot this rat up, you know, with Vioxx, and the rat, you know, starts jumping around, and all of a sudden they say, wow, what if we had this drug on the market and we could do this for people? People would buy that. People would spend a lot of money to buy this drug if it would make them feel better, if it would kill their pain. So they developed this drug, and then he said the first thing they do when they get this drug developed is they shoot this up in monkeys and animals until it kills them. And then they take a look at their body weight and they say, okay, this is the maximum that you can shoot into this animal, because when you shoot 20 milligrams in it, it kills them every time. So they start reducing the dose until it stops killing them. And when they get it down to 5 milligrams and it doesn't kill them, then they say, okay, that's the safe level. Now we know how much is safe. So they keep working with that, and they keep records on this, and they submit that to the FDA, and they say, hey, this drug kills pain. 5 milligrams doesn't kill people, so it's safe and it's effective. The FDA looks at it and they say, well, okay, we should test that for about 5 years and see what happens. But then you see, you got all these detail people out there, and then you got Bob Schieffer advertising this Vioxx, and then you got Dorothy Hummel skating around with all these little bread snappers following her, and you get real excited, and so you say, well, I got to have some of that. So you go to your doctor and you say, I got to have some of this Vioxx, doc, and the doc says, well, it hasn't really been proven yet. And you say, doc, I'll get another doctor if you don't give me Vioxx. And the doctor says, well, in that case, here, let me write you a prescription. I mean, after all, your local doctor is a drug pusher. That's his business. He's a drug dealer. Nothing more, nothing less. So you go down to the drugstore and you buy this Vioxx. And here's the second thing that happens. The drug company then tries to keep long-term records on what happens to Vioxx over a long period of time, you know, like 10, 15, 20 years. And so in the case of Vioxx, they found out after about, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years on the market, it was killing people. You see, you don't know how many people it's going to kill up front. You just know that 5 milligrams isn't going to kill you right away. But then over a period of time, we find out that, well, that Vioxx mixed with 2 or 3 other drugs. Now keep in mind, there might be 5 or 6 chemicals in this drug called Vioxx. Now remember, the average person over 65 is taking 6 drugs. So you take 5 chemicals times 6. How many is that? That's 30. That's 30 chemicals. Now remember, when we were testing this Vioxx, we were testing chemicals randomly to find out what would happen. So we're testing these chemicals and we find out that, oops, that chemical don't work. That kills the rats. And so we change that chemical to something else. Oh, well, that's better because it doesn't kill the rats, but does it alleviate the pain? All right, now watch what happens. These chemicals in various combinations create new drugs. So when you're taking 6 drugs, boys and girls, with 5 chemicals in each drug, that's 30 different chemicals in these 6 drugs all mixed together. And there's hundreds of these drugs out there. So you people out there in drug land, in la-la land, are a great chemical laboratory constantly experimenting with all of these chemicals. And then it kills 300,000 of you every year because of these various combinations, which were never tested by anybody. They're actually being tested by you out there in real life. You are the experiment. And so when this Vioxx is on the market for a while, and pretty soon it starts killing people, it may not be the Vioxx that's killing you. It's the Vioxx in combination with the other drugs that you're taking that's killing you. God only knows what those drug combinations are making, or what wonderful new drugs are being invented out there by you and millions of people like you. Now, despite the widespread knowledge that half of all new drugs will cause serious side effects in some people, neither the government nor the drug companies systematically collect information on adverse reactions to these new drugs. And even when it is recognized that a new drug will be given, to many patients for many years, rarely are systemic post-marketing studies carried out. We're not actually looking for any adverse reactions from Vioxx, but if they appear accidentally, we'll note them down. So boys and girls, you people are guinea pigs out there. Guinea pigs. And everybody in the know knows that you're guinea pigs, which makes me kind of sit back and say, you know, is that really rational behavior to expose yourself to these experiments out here in the marketplace, taking these drugs in various combinations, having no knowledge whatsoever? No chemist has ever tested this. No druggist. Now, the druggists themselves are trained along this line. Doctors aren't, but the druggists are. And so this druggist guy told me, he said, you know, in many times, people will come in with a prescription, and then the druggist will say, well, are you taking Redux? And they'll say, well, yes, I am. Oh, God, well, we can't sell you Vioxx with Redux because that'll kill you. It's your druggist. You know, if you're going to buy drugs, you should tell your druggist, now, listen, Mr. Druggist, I'm taking these 5 drugs, and I want to add a 6th so that I can be average. And here's what I'm going to add. Do you think that these 6 drugs taken in combination might pose a problem? And the druggist is the guy you want to ask that question to, because he's trained in it. Well, he doesn't really know either, according to my druggist student, but he's got better training and a better handle on what these various combinations of drugs, because he knows of hundreds of combinations of drugs that are killers. He doesn't know all of them, but he knows more than the doctor does, because the doctor isn't even trained in these combinations. How do you like that? And I said, surely you've got to be kidding me, Todd. It can't be, you know, that the doctors aren't trained. They're the ones that are prescribing. Now remember, the doctor doesn't know any more than the detail man tells him. Let's think about that. I didn't know this either. See, doctors are pretty busy guys. They make a lot of money, and to make a lot of money, you got to be pretty busy. And so the doctor, and if your doctor's anything like ours, here in Anne Arundel area, you walk in the doctor's office, and there's about six or eight people in there. And pretty soon, they take somebody, and they just disappear behind this door. So they're gone. And then pretty soon, another person disappears, and he goes, and he's in another room. See, this doctor's got three or four rooms back there, and he makes his rounds around the rooms, and he's got his assistants bringing these people in. It's kind of like traffic court. You know, I mean, they're running as many people through here as they possibly can to collect as many office calls as they possibly can and prescribing as many drugs as they possibly can because they make money off of all of this. This is their business. How much time does this doctor have, you know, spare time, to read all of these drug literatures, you know, all the literature on all these new drugs to find out what they do and don't do? You know, assuming that the doctor even wants to read it. You know, I read a lot of material, but I've got my druthers, and when I have my druthers, I'm reading Mad Magazine. You know, if I had my druthers, I'd sit here and read Mad. I'm not really all that interested in statistics on gasoline. I've got my report here. Holland, gasoline $6.25. I gave you that report. That's not my favorite reading material. It's my business reading material. And so I read this business reading material, like I'm reading all of these articles on prescription drugs that kill, another kind of drug problem, from Rachel's Environment and Health Weekly. Sometimes those are interesting reports, and sometimes they're kind of dull, dry, and uninteresting. And so I like to read interesting stuff, like Spy versus Spy. And I'll just bet you that the doctor, you know, if he had his druthers, I mean, if he had to sit here and read a Vioxx brochure from Merck and Spy versus Spy, I'll just bet you that the doctor would prefer reading Mad Magazine to a Vioxx commercial. I just got it in my brain that that's probably true. And if that's the case, then he relies, like all of us do, on the representation that is made by the salesman. Now, let's picture the salesman. Remember the detail man? He comes into the doctor's office. What's he going to do? Say, hey, this Vioxx is a killer in combination with these other drugs over here. You got to be really careful with this stuff. I mean, it causes heart arrhythmia. It causes heart attack. It kills pain. No doubt about that. And if you use 20 milligrams, it kills patients. But if you use 5 milligrams, it doesn't. Hey, and this stuff is really great for arthritis. Hell, that doctor would look at that and say, I don't want that stuff in here. Get that arsenic out of here. So the detail man, it doesn't take him very long to figure out when he walks in that he wants to accentuate the positive. This stuff kills pain. That's what we all want to hear. What we don't want to hear is that this stuff causes heart arrhythmia, this stuff causes heart attacks, this stuff kills people. We don't want to hear that. So he doesn't tell him. So the doctor listens to the detail man, and the detail man is busy spending $10,000 a year on this doctor. So he gives the doctor a bunch of free samples, which the doctor then in turn gives to you or sells to you to get you interested in Vioxx, because after all, you keep coming back to the doc and you say, hey, doc, my bones hurt. And the doc says, here, try this. And you try it. And say, God, my bones don't hurt anymore. Now your heart is being eaten away, but your bones aren't hurting. And after all, that's what you're paying for. You want pain suppression in your bones. Now your hands hurt. Now you didn't ask, well, how come my hands are hurting? Because I'm eating Jimmy Dean pure pork sausage and I got trichinosis worms running around in my body and they screwed up my bursa sacs and that's why I've got arthritis. Yet you're not interested in that. You don't want bad information like I got to give up Jimmy Dean. So you keep eating your stuff and the doctor, he's not going to give you bad information, you know, and say, hey, listen, stop eating that fat and blood because it's going to kill you. You don't want to hear that, and he's not going to tell you something you don't want to hear. All right, now salesmen, boys and girls, let's understand something. Salesmen sell stuff to make money. I'm a salesman. And I know that if I want to sell you something, I want to tell you what you want to hear. I want to sell you something that makes you feel real good. That's why heroin and cocaine sell so well, makes you feel real good. That's why Marlboro sell well, makes you feel real good. Jack Daniels makes you feel real good. Now, of course, it may give you cirrhosis of the liver. But, you know, it makes you feel real good. And after all, that's what we want. We want to feel real good. But, boys and girls, don't you think we ought to take a look at the long-term reaction that this drug, alcohol, tobacco, is going to have on our bodies, and when we get to be 60 or 70 or 80 years old. Now, I'm 67. I don't wear glasses, don't have a hearing aid, and I feel real good. I'm not near as fast as I used to be, and you know, compared to years ago, but, you know, health-wise, you know, I'm in pretty good condition. I'm one of that 1% in the country that doesn't have any symptoms. I don't have any diseases. I don't have rheumatism or arthritis or heart trouble or cancer. I don't have diabetes, and, you know, just getting along quite nicely. Now, of course, I work hard at that, and I try to avoid, you know, Jimmy Dean. I avoid fat and blood And there's 1% of us in this country. That's all that's left. 1% of the people of America are symptom-free. 99% of you people listening to me right now, you've got allergies, or you've got arthritis and rheumatism or diabetes or high blood pressure or something wrong with you. And don't you think you ought to ask what caused that, as opposed to what's going to take away the pain? You know, boys and girls, the pain is God's signal to you. Something ain't right. And when you take a painkiller, what you're doing is short-circuiting the pain, but you're not eliminating the problem. Now, I know you don't want somebody to tell you to stop smoking, so I won't. That's a choice for you to make. But boys and girls, you know that smoking causes lung cancer. Now, you're pretty cavalier about that, and so you hand somebody a cigarette, and you say, here, have a coffin nail. That's what we used to call them when I was a kid, coffin nails. And so we're pretty cavalier about that until somebody comes down with lung cancer, and then all of a sudden it gets to be real serious. Oh, doc, can we have a lung transplant? Can I have somebody else's lung? Can somebody else die so that I can have their lung? That's what you get down to. People with lung cancer aren't nearly as cavalier as smokers passing out coffin nails. Do you ever notice that? Some guy that's dying from cirrhosis of the liver ain't near as cavalier as he is in the bar when he's saying, set him up for my friends. Now, you know, if you want to be cavalier as you're passing out coffin nails, and you want to be cavalier as you're setting them up for your buddies, you ought to be just as cavalier. Well, you know, I'm 37. You know, can't live forever. And I've got lung cancer. Time for me to check out. So I'm going to sit down, shut up, fold my hands, and die quietly. I don't hear people doing that. Mickey Mantle said he wanted to pay $500,000 to get a liver transplant so he could live 6 more months. I'll bet you his widow could have used that $500,000 just as well as the doctors in the hospital. And I'll bet you if Mickey had taken better care of his liver, he'd probably still be alive today, for crying out loud. You ever stop and think about that? All right, I'm about out of time. I'm going to have to leave it right there. I've been telling you about this thing of drug interreactions and why they kill so many people. Kill so many people. They kill 300,000 a year that they admit to. 300,000 a year that they admit to, and it's double that. It's the equivalent of a 747 with 500 people on it crashing every day, 365 days a year. And that still wouldn't cover 300,000. All right, I'm about out of time, so I'm going to cut it off right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School here in Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, just go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in public interest. Time's up. Got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, talking about drugs and drug side effects. Thanks for listening, and until then, good night, friends.